I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here for 2 hours a day, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, those few of you that there are. Today's Thursday. I usually have somebody from Americans Prosperity in studio with me in the second hour to talk about what they are doing to try to free the people of Mississippi economically, but they are actually in Georgia. I'm sure they are door knocking and making phone calls on behalf of Herschel Walker in the upcoming runoff election in Georgia. So Starla Brown is going to call in, and I'm actually very excited about that. I want to hear what's going on in Georgia prior to this election. You can't trust anything that the media says, for sure. So I'm anxious to get a boots on the ground report from there, because they are certainly making it look like on the mainstream media that Herschel Walker is fading and fading fast. The Warnock character out of Georgia, assumed to be returning back to the Senate. I don't trust the media. I'll be interested to hear what Starla has to say. I'm sure it's somewhat of an uphill battle just to get people out to vote again. But we'll see. So we'll talk to Starla next hour about what's going on in Georgia. A hodgepodge of stories today. I guess before I get to that, I'll go ahead and get into our quotes of the day. This one I love. This is from Thomas Paine. And I'm not sure if I've read this one before, but I feel it in my bones. Thomas Paine said, quote, "I prefer peace, but if trouble must come, let it come in my time so that my children can live in peace." This is certainly a reference more towards probably the struggle for independence in the Revolutionary War. For me, that's the kind of feeling that I have when it comes to the mess that the grown-ups, and that's you, Greatest Generation, that's you, Baby Boomers, and that's us, Gen Xers, the mess we have made for the youth of this country, the basket case of a financial situation we're leaving for our youth. I prefer prosperity. I prefer easy times for everybody. But if we've got to have some struggle to regain some sanity in our economic system, I'd prefer it happen now so we don't lay it at the feet of our children. My kids are getting to be professional age. I'd prefer they not have to live through this with children. But that has yet to be seen. So there was apparently a time back in the nation's history, I guess around its founding, where there was still some responsibility by older people. They felt they should not pass along horrific things to their children. Can you imagine a time like that? Today, as long as my 401k goes up, my house price goes up, I don't care what happens to the kids. That's apparently where we've landed now. Thomas Paine also said, "A body of men holding themselves accountable to nobody ought not to be trusted by anybody." And Ronald Reagan, this is an interesting quote. I think it's a little disingenuous, tad bit. I'll take a tiny bit of exception to it, although Reagan was the president in our last kind of inflationary period, Carter, and then the inflation bled over into the Reagan administration when they started raising rates up to about 20% to tame that inflation. So Reagan took office during an inflationary time. He said, "Inflation, that's the price we pay for those government benefits everybody thought were free." Now, this is kind of true. The thing is, this seems to intimate that it is just the welfare system alone, and welfare certainly, printing up money and just handing it out to people or It's less inflationary to actually steal money from one group and give it to another. But our government hasn't done that in a long time. They do that. But most of the big spending projects are actually just printed up money, inflating the money supply. The idea that it's just the welfare system, just all these benefits that the people of the country are getting, that's what causes inflation. I'm here to tell you. The corporations, the defense companies, the big pharma, big food, they get the largest benefits of the financial system in the United States, the system that we have created, the donor class, the corporate welfare, whether it is in direct subsidies or programs that are directly taking money from taxpayers' pockets and funneling them into these giant industries, these special interest groups, that dwarfs any so-called, air quotes here in the studio, benefits that any of us actually get from the government. Now, there are people who draw government checks. There's certainly no doubt about it, but let's not be kidding ourselves here. Does anybody actually believe that the government that we have serves the people first? The government's really trying to make sure that they improve the quality of your life by giving you all kinds of stuff. No, while there may be some checks that are sent out to people that they have trapped in a system of poverty, giving you just enough to keep your head above water so you don't take to the streets, and that's becoming harder and harder for them to do, those little checks that they do just to keep the sustenance level to some certain people are just dwarfed by the use of our money, the tens of billions of dollars going to Ukraine, which really means going to companies doing business in Ukraine and other money laundering activities. Those benefits far outweigh anything in the welfare state itself. Welfare is, if money's printed up and handed out to people, just like the STEMI checks in the Donald Trump administration, where he printed up $6 trillion, a lot of that went to people, but a lot of it went to companies too. People got $1,200 checks. Some industries got tens of billions of dollars of bailout. I think that's probably as good a way as any to put it. And then this was kind of funny. It was just a meme. One way I've tried to explain libertarianism to people, to make it simple, if you've ever seen the show Parks and Recreation, Ron Swanson, who was the city manager who just hated government, he wanted the government to do absolutely nothing. He tried to hire people that were incompetent or lazy because he didn't want the government actually doing anything. Ron Swanson on Parks and Recreation was the libertarian. And I would imagine to a person of conservative nature, if you ever watched Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson was your favorite character because he was a man's man, but he referred to himself as a libertarian. Anyway, there's a meme with Ron Swanson's face on it. It says, "I hate words that are the same but are pronounced differently, like read and red, live and live, and taxation and theft." That's exactly right. They mean the exact same thing, taxation and theft. They're just pronounced differently. I was listening to last night. I have really become very interested in expatriation stuff. I've talked about this. I don't mean to keep repeating myself. I just found something very interesting. I was listening to a guy yesterday. I don't even have his name in front of me. I can't remember. I can't even remember the name of his organization, and I should, because maybe I should turn some people on to it. I'm somebody who is actively seeking an escape pod. I'm not prepared for it right now. I still have much work to do here, but I want to make sure that I've got my plans to bug out. This guy is he helps people become expats. He runs a company, and his entire focus, just think about this for just a second, because it seems to really run counter to the what I believe now may just be a giant marketing ploy, which is this idea that everybody's trying to come to the U.S. Now, I'm not saying there are not people trying that are fleeing the violence unleashed by the American drug war in South and Central America. I'm not saying they're not people coming across the border, but the idea that everybody is seeking that Statue of Liberty freedom and they're all coming to the United States. This guy actually makes a living. He said he doesn't even really pay attention to the news. He's so hyper-focused on getting people out of the United States, Canada, and Western European countries to try to get them somewhere free. And it's just so funny on its face because you think about how the United States and these advanced Western, air quotes here in the studio, democracies of the United States and Canada and England and Germany and France, you know, these very shiny societies that look on the face of them to be these economic engines, these places where civilized society takes place. And we've spent a lot of time looking at Central America and South America as these places that are just banana republic hell holes. Well, I'm here to tell you, the more I study this stuff on expatriation, this guy, and I'm really feeling derelict in my duties to not remember his name, this guy spends all his time trying to help people from these Western countries find real freedom, and they're finding it in places like Panama, Colombia, Costa Rica. Some of these little third world countries that we pretend like are just barely worth our acknowledgement. They are actually have become, we have flipped it, and I'm not sure exactly when it happened. I'm sure it was probably decades ago. But these countries are actually where you can be free of constant taxation, where you can be free of constant government noodling around in your life. And the more I study these expat locations, what's very interesting is a lot of these countries pretty much say, look, if you can prove that you've got a job or that you're going to bring some income to our society, then we welcome you and we're going to leave you alone because we know you're going to spend it in our community. You're going to buy a house. You're going to go out to eat. You're going to support a local economy here. Now, they do not want a lot of deadbeats. Isn't that a novel concept? But they pretty much will open the doors and then not molest you once you're in the country if you're just a productive person and want to contribute something to their society. So the Underground Railroad of freedom is not leading to the United States, not leading to Great Britain, not leading to Canada. If you want freedom, you actually need to be looking to those countries that we look down our nose on at as some kind of little backwoods nothing. And you look at the government here. Our federal government, I've said for many years now, it's completely lost. We threw a Hail Mary in 2016. Donald Trump, the air quotes here in the studio, outsider. He was the guy that was going to go in there and really upset the system that everybody was so dissatisfied with. Strangely enough, he ended up growing the government by the most in history, adding to huge military bankrupting budgets while acting like he's removing us from foreign wars, adding to a Department of Education that fails more by the year. It becomes the biggest it's ever been with the most new money sloshing around it than ever, giving the CDC like total control over our entire society. This was underneath the guy who was supposed to be the real change agent. And so if that was supposedly the interrupter to the system, and now I've got people out there that want to do that again, surely the next time we try it, it's going to work out great. You know, one thing I haven't mentioned is during the midterms, I don't think I ever got around to it. There's a lot of people that disagree with me on Donald Trump. That's fine. But they'll say, you know, I think he's learned his lesson, right? He hired Christopher Wray. He hired William Barr. He hired Goldman Sachs to run the Treasury. He hired Raytheon to run the Defense Department. He hired John Bolton. He hired Mike Pence. But people say, but I think he's learned his lesson. Do you know that Donald Trump went to Florida and campaigned with Marco Rubio as a MAGA candidate? I'm just saying. I don't think he's really learned his lesson. But it's just interesting to me. I think we have thrown what we thought was the biggest interrupter to the system, something that would just really tear it all down and give something that gave power back to the people. And it was a giant swing and a miss. And if that didn't work, I don't know what you're expecting to actually turn things around, but it's just very interesting. It's not every country in South America and Central America. I believe Peru was especially bad on COVID stuff. But it is very interesting to stop and think that all of these little countries will actually treat you better as an American than the American government will. They will treat you better as a British citizen than the British government will treat you. They will treat you better as a Canadian in Colombia than the Canadian government will treat you as a Canadian citizen in Canada. It's really quite fascinating. I'm beginning to believe this facade, this idea that everybody's chomping at the bit to come to America, the land of opportunity. I think that at this point is just a marketing slogan. The most productive people in the United States, I believe, are starting to eye the exits. We'll see how that works out. I'll be right back. You know, one of my biggest fears is when I look at this expatriation, where is freedom going to be next? If this continues its way, we could be weeks away from this central bank digital currency being rolled out. And then once that's started and people start to accept it in little ways, I don't think they're going to come in and say, turn in your dollars, we got a CBDC. They'll use it for things here or there. And then before you know it, it'll be used for a little bit more. And then they will just say, well, you know, this has really worked out so well that we just believe it's the way to go. Or we'll have a dollar crisis, whatever. We could be weeks from this. And I cannot emphasize enough the freedom destruction. If we tie everything that we have, everything that we own, everything that we do, everything we buy, we sell to some centralized central bank currency that they can turn off. I mean, we've just lived through a few years of where people losing their mind when they got cut off of Twitter, and I don't blame them. It was wrong. That kind of censorship is wrong. Can you even imagine? What are you going to self-censor? Twitter won't have to censor you anymore. YouTube won't have to censor you anymore. People will be complete self-censors as soon as a few people are made examples of where they just go, oh, we saw what you posted on social media. We don't like that. You now have no money. We've turned off your digital wallet. This is really happening right now. They're testing this thing. I've talked about it. And at the beginning of next year, they're going to tell us how great the test went. Prediction. And that they're going to start using it in little ways. So when I look at these other countries, I feel like the time may be short. I'm not prepared. I need a few more years to have the cash to make myself a productive member of another society. But my fear is choosing the wrong place, because I always understand that as every nation has got a government, and these governments can always go rogue. And boy, would I hate to plop myself down in the middle of one of them and then have their government turn on a switch and suddenly become the authoritarian place I was trying to leave. But I wanted to play this clip. I've got to narrate it. I've got to translate it. This is French television from what I can only assume is Quebec up in Canada. And I'm going to, this is an interview that they are interviewing children on some television show. High production value. You know, this looks almost like an America's Got Talent set or something. You know, lots of lights and background and pretty people doing the presentation. They've got these kids. This is on Canadian television. It's in French because, you know, those Quebecians, they've stuck to their French. But I'm going to translate what is said in this clip. I want you to listen to the children. And, of course, this is not all of them. And this is the parents' fault. I hold no ill will towards these poor, poor children. who have been propagandized to and are being raised to become this. But you want to talk about future leaders of Western countries? Holy cow. Here is, and as I say, I've got to translate this. Let me turn it down. That's what the French is in the background, so you understand people are talking. This is all just production value stuff. So this woman's first question is, as she talks to these kids up on the stage, she says, speaking of traveling, are you vaccinated? Yes, we both have one dose. Really? And do you agree with the mandatory vaccination? Yes. Looks like I drilled that into them, Julie. This is the mom. And I mean, I don't say this to judge anybody or body shame anybody. But if you're really concerned about a disease, one thing that became very apparent about COVID was being massively overweight was a dangerous place to be with COVID. Either over 85 or morbidly obese. If you avoided both of those, pretty much smooth sailing for everybody. This mother, who has terrorized her children around COVID with these shots, she's morbidly obese. And she's so proud of herself that she's taught her children about mandatory vaccinations, but not just mandatory. Listen to the rest of this. What should we do with people who don't want to get vaxxed? We should call the police. This is the cutest little, I don't know, he's kind of blondish red hair kid in a flannel shirt. He looks to be all of about 8 or 9 years old, maybe. I'm bad with kids' ages. He's a young, fresh-faced, good-looking Western kid. What should we do with the people who don't get vaxxed? This kid says we should call the police. And the presenters on this thing say, oh, yes, yes. If they don't have their vaccine, it can put a lot of people in danger. So just like the government is doing, let me back up. She's speaking quickly. So just like the government is doing right now, you have to cut things little by little for them until they get fed up and get vaxxed. I see we've got future politicians with us. Thank you. Thank you to all our guests. And they're all clapping. These are the children they're raising in Canada right now. If you find out somebody's not vaccinated, what should you do? Should you implore to them with the science and logically explain to them why this shot is something that would help them and help her? No, Call the government. Call the police. And then this other little girl, she's equally as cute. I just noticed it now. These kids are sitting about 8 feet apart on a couch, because their parents have terrorized them with the idea that COVID's going to kill them, even though their statistic risk of even coming down with a bad case of COVID is zero. But this other little girl is equally cute. She looks to be maybe about 12 years old, fresh-faced little girl. She says we need to cut their lives little by little until they become fed up and get vaxxed. See, this is the Western world now. You would hear these same kinds of things in Europe, and there are certainly people in the United States who have felt the same way. They say the children are our future. Well, that is a terrifying dystopian future, particularly for the people of Canada. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. Did I hear on the news break at the top of the hour, the CBS News, that they are doing some kind of new intervention or training for kids with ADHD and driving? This is where we are now. This is part of the driving curriculum. We have got so many kids who are now diagnosed or told that they have ADHD that we are trying to, apparently they're a road hazard. The news story said they are twice as likely. I wrote down the term. I thought this was interesting. I don't know if I'd heard it before. They're twice as likely to have an accident. Should there be some kind of stickers on these cars? so we can understand which one of these kids are twice as likely to smash into us because they have got ADHD? They said they're twice as likely to have an accident as the, and they use this term, the neurotypical child. Well, I guess for now, at least, the normal way is to not have ADHD, but if Big Pharma gets their way, you know, they've rolled out this plan where they say we're going to start testing all children for anxiety, even if they show no signs, no symptoms, no nothing. We still need to get them in front of a mental health practitioner and see if we can find something in there to diagnose them with to start getting them on some pills earlier. This ADHD thing is such a scam. It really is such a scam. If you've got a child that's got difficulty, look at what you're feeding your child, for the love of God. And now if you find out as a parent that these kids with this ADHD, which is really just feeding them horrific food and then handing them a screen to stare at for 12 hours a day, that's really the problem. But they're going to make you think that your child's just defective, something genetically wrong with your offspring. But if you found out that your child was twice as likely to have a car accident, I don't know about other parents, but I remember when my kids got their driver's license, I was happy for them, but I was nervous too, you know? You don't want your child to have an accident, do you? Seems like maybe that would be a good enough reason for parents of teens to try to address ADHD, not through more medication, not through giving them what is legalized meth. That's what these ADHD drugs are. Ritalin and Adderall. And instead of doing that, maybe you should try to fix that in your child so they're not twice as likely to smash up the family car and potentially injure themselves or others. I believe people want to be scammed. I was looking at, and I'm going to play a clip in a few minutes, this FTX situation that's come out. Obviously, it was a giant scam. We are all kind of grasping at exactly what this was. It appears to be something, probably a setup to fail money laundering organization to herald in the new regulation of what should be an unregulated and decentralized cryptocurrency market. The government can't stand that. They're going to come at it from every which way. This FTX was perfectly timed. Within days of them announcing their testing for the central bank digital currency, suddenly we find out there's big problems with Bitcoin. And so we're still wrapping our minds around exactly what FTX was, and we may never actually know the truth, but it certainly appears to be a scam and most possibly some kind of a deep state scam orchestrated to fail from its inception. But I was thinking about that and just some, there may be something about human beings where we actually want to be scammed. Now, that probably sounds odd. I would think a lot of us, you know, if I buy something, I look at a ton of ratings and I'm always on guard. Is this a real rating? Or, you know, if you ever try to do an internet search of, you know, best blank, whatever it is that you're trying to buy. Man, you have no earthly idea if you were going to some place that's been sponsored by a particular product to recommend it to you. It's a minefield. I feel like I am constantly on guard for being scammed, but yet we continue to fall for scams over and over and over again. The whole political system. Most of the candidates people fall in love with. The taxation system. The healthcare system. These things are all just scams. And what's very interesting is that, you know, when you look at healthcare, at least as an observer, this is what I see with people. They can look at, I know people who look and they see this COVID shot scam. Really, almost the whole COVID scam, right? This whole operation that was run basically to test and see exactly how obedient, how passive, how domesticated we are. What will we put up with at the hands of even Republican governors who told you, restaurants, you can only have 25% of your customers in. It was a great test for these people because we went along with just about everything. And so you look at that, and so I'll see people who say, you know, They're on to the scam, and particularly the big pharma scam of these shots that don't work and they're dangerous. And they can see that and say, I'm not falling for that. They're not getting that experimental gene therapy in me. I'm on to them. But if they get a sniffle, they run to a doctor and they immediately start taking some other big pharma product. They can't expand their mind out and say, I guess there's so much pride in saying, oh, I stiffed out that COVID shot scam. I'm really smart, not really realizing, well, actually, I'm still falling for a ton of other scams that are within the medical system right now. I get all my shots. I take my drugs. I take my high blood pressure medications. That big pharma, it's no good when it comes to these shots, but oh, thank goodness they've given me a pill I can take to get my blood pressure down, and I can still eat all the crap I want to, and they'll just adjust the dosage. And so it may be something about people that we actually want to be scammed. That seems very counterintuitive, but is there any other explanation for how many different things we will fall for? I mean, I have to fight people when I tell them, I think you should be able to keep all of your income and the government doesn't have lay claim to any of it. Well, that just doesn't make any sense, Mike. How would you fund the government? Well, first of all, do you really want to fund the government? Is that something you're happy and proud about? Your contribution to our federal government? Do you really feel, does it feel like charity giving to you? That's the first thing. And then the other thing is, obviously I'm not going to get into it, but the government takes money from all kinds of different places. They don't need your individual income taxes. But we've actually got a system where I've heard conservatives say, I'm a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. That's two scams you've fallen for right there. So I'm just saying, this FTX thing, it's unfortunate. A lot of people fell for this stuff. It was a bright and shiny object. Obviously, apparently a complete planned corralling of people into this money laundering organization where they just pulled the plug right when it needed to be plugged. But I want to play, when I come back, there's this Sam Bankman-Fried guy with FTX. He's out doing interviews. He sat atop an organization that essentially took customer money, left people, sometimes they lost millions of dollars in these accounts, just gone. He's out doing interviews. I don't know. I think that it was the New York Times or something either reported or they were hosting an event. He was a speaker like last week, or at least it was announced last week. I don't know if they pulled him off of it, but there were certainly a lot of people going, what in the hell is going on? This guy's just walking around. He's giving speeches. He just scammed people out of, I think the total I've heard is $32 billion. And he's out giving speeches and interviews. Anyway, he gave one to CNBC, and it's quite amazing to listen to this guy and think that nobody caught on to this before. There actually were a lot of people in the crypto world who smelled a rat with this thing in the first place. But there's something so disingenuous about this interview, and I'm going to get to it, and I'm targeting really CNBC. For talking about wanting to get scammed, I used to love CNBC. It was on all the time, particularly back when I was trying to become a stockbroker and when I was a financial advisor. CNBC was on pretty much my entire workday. I'm watching the markets. I'm listening to the asset managers. This organization is just a Wall Street globalist channel designed to separate you from your money and heralded it up to Wall Street. But there's something so disingenuous about this interview. I'll explain that when I come back.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, I wanted to play this interview with Sam Bankman-Fried that was on CNBC for kind of a purpose, because I'll just tell you how this interview hit me. It's interesting, too, to listen to this guy and think he was running tens of billions of dollars, was one of the major Democrat donors. I mean, people will blame people who lost money on FTX. They'll say, well, see, we needed more regulation of this stuff. Man, all you had to do was listen to this guy or his girlfriend for about 3 minutes, and you would have said, good Lord, these people are running this giant operation? No way am I putting my money on this thing. It's not hard. You got to do a little of your due diligence. But just like people surrender their complete autonomy to the FDA, if the FDA signs off on it, then I'm not going to do any due diligence on the drug. The FDA said it's good. My doctor prescribed it. It must be okay. Oh, my gosh, where'd these side effects come from? I mean, you're on your own. There's nobody really looking out for you, even if there is a regulatory structure in place. But anyway, I wanted to play this real quick here. Let me get it pulled up. I actually left the ad to play because there was an ad earlier when I kept pulling these clips up. It was from some private equity group that was saying, we hope someday no children ever die of cancer. The reason that I thought that was interesting was because they weren't saying we hope kids don't get cancer anymore. They basically said, this is a company that's firm, obviously, that invests in a bunch of high-dollar medical treatments for children who get cancer. So they're going to make a lot of money. The more kids that get cancer, the more money they're going to make. Unfortunately, that ad didn't play this time, but anyway, I've explained it.
Generous view, and the generous view is that you are a young man who made a series of terrible, terrible, very, very bad decisions.
Now, this is Andrew Ross Sorkin with CNBC.
The less generous view is that you have committed a massive fraud, that this is a Ponzi scheme, a manipulation of the system. And I want to start there because I think that there are so many people who have that question, which is, what is this and what did happen?
Yeah, look, thanks for having me. And
Just listen, this is the guy. So as I'm saying, you only had to listen to probably 3 minutes of this guy talking at any point. He's obviously mentally challenged. Now, maybe he's an idiot savant. I think he may just be an idiot who was set up by his parents who were involved in democratic and globalist type stuff. He may have just be the patsy. They just sacrificed their son to be, because it almost feels like he can't even comprehend exactly what he's done.
And at the end of the day, I was CEO of FTX. And that means whatever happened, whatever it happened, I had a duty. I had a duty to all of our stakeholders, to our customers, our creditors. I had a duty to our employees, to our investors, and to the regulators in the world, to do right by them, to make sure the right things happened at the company. And clearly, I didn't do a good job of that. Clearly, I made a lot of mistakes or things I would give anything to be able to do over again. I didn't ever try to commit fraud on anyone. I was excited about the prospects of FTX a month ago.
You know, I'm almost believing this kid. I'll be honest with you. I'm almost believing him that maybe he was set up as the fall guy for this. They talk about pitch meetings on FTX where he would go to places to try to raise money for FTX, and he would be playing a video game in the corner. And it was couched as this guy is so cool. He's so aloof. He's not your typical guy. This is one of the young geniuses. He was playing a video game during a pitch meeting. He had one of his, you know, one of his Wall Street handlers or whatever were selling this thing. And he's just sitting off on the side just doing his thing. That this was couched as some kind of cachet, some kind of a coolness about him. But he may just be a real simpleton that was set up to fail. I don't know. I have no idea. But listening to him talk, he really may just be a mentally challenged kid who was forced into being the face of this, and he had no idea what they had planned.
I saw it as a thriving, growing business. I was shocked by what happened this month. And, you know, reconstructing it, where are there things I wish I had done differently?
Well, let's talk about some of the things you would want to have done differently. But I don't want this to be an abstraction for folks, because it's a lot of big numbers and often doesn't feel human. One of the letters I got, I want to read to you, Sam, because it's from a gentleman who said that he lost his life savings. And the subject line is, Sam Bankman-Fried stole $2 million from me. Says, Andrew, can you please ask SBF why he decided to steal my life savings and the $10 billion more from customers to give to his hedge fund, Alameda? Can you ask him why his hedge fund was leveraging long all of these S coins? I'm going to keep it polite for the kids. Please ask him if he thinks what happened was fraud. These are the kinds of letters that I've been getting repeatedly over the past several days. What do you tell this man?
Okay, here's why I bring this up. Well, there's Adam Sorkin reading this story from a poor CNBC has spent the last 2 years pumping FTX on their airwaves constantly. Why? Because FTX did a ton of advertising on anyone? CNBC. CNBC has made a ton of money from this money laundering operation, as many in the media landscape have. And for Adam Ross Sorkin now to sit back and say, what do you say to these people that you conned? CNBC could have done their due diligence on this. They've got enough smart people who understand finance, not operation, to know that FTX was set up to fail and that people were going to lose their money there if they had wanted to. They didn't want to know that because they were cashing in on it, too.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mack Hike of Flowood Studios, and it's Thursday. Most Thursdays, we have a representative from Americans for Prosperity in studio with us, telling us what's going on in the state, what they're doing. We got a legislative session coming up that Americans for Prosperity. That's really their. That's their big push. They get in there and work with the legislature, try to free the state of Mississippi economically. But right now, they also have a national organization, and they get involved in elections. And we've got Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity on the phone with us from Georgia, where they are knee-deep involved in the Senate race, the runoff between Warnock and Herschel Walker in Georgia. So I'm very interested to hear a boots-on-the-ground report from Georgia. Starla, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Mike. Great to be on today. Yeah, it's a little cold here in Georgia, but, you know, I'm adjusting to the cold weather in Mississippi, so it was great to have some 30 degrees before I got up here in the mountains. Our team is actually based in Rome, Georgia this week, and we're here with our friends at Americans for Prosperity Action, working with them this week. And like you said, we're engaged in the Senate runoff with Herschel Walker, who has been endorsed by our friends over at Americans for Prosperity Action. And I guess the best I could report from you on the ground is obviously we're in a stage where getting out the vote is key.
Right.
I was in, happened to be for Thanksgiving in the Atlanta area earlier, and was saw some early voting over there. Really, just wasn't working a door to door over there, but I was on the ground enough to see some of the polling locations, and the lines were long. They were definitely long, and people were showing up and turning out to vote. We came over to Rome, Georgia. We've been here, this is sort of our last day. We're heading back, but we've been here about a week. And same thing here, small town, small mountain town, but lines are long. In fact, some of the things I've heard from people at the door is that they had to open up additional locations because the lines were long. And so people are getting out and early voting. Mixed opinions on that, but I will tell you one of the things I've heard from people who are in that 55 and plus range really have been adamant that the early voting is good for them. Two things they worry about. One, they want to make sure they vote. That's what we're hearing from the ground, is that the people that we're talking to the door, people we've identified that we want to turn out to vote for Herschel Walker, are anxious to get their votes in. And so any sort of issue that would impede them from doing that, you know, like I get sick with the flu by chance, or,
right,
you know, something could come up, or what if it, you know, bad weather that day or whatever, they're actually excited. So we've talked to a lot of people in that 55 plus range. They're actually voting early this week and excited. There are several people who said kind of the opposite, where, hey, I'm going to go on election day. By then, a lot of people have already voted. Hasn't been necessarily a real issue for them. So it really depends. You know what I mean? It just kind of depends. But I will say this, the people that are telling us that they are voting for Herschel Walker are very enthusiastic about this vote and are anxious to get to the polls and cast their votes.
Yeah.
So I think that's something. I was here for the runoff, prior, And I will tell you that this is good to hear, because during that time frame, we had a lot of outside people telling people their vote wouldn't count, things wouldn't matter. And it caused a lot of people to stay home. And you're not hearing that type of message this time around.
I mean, that's really what happened in 2020, isn't it? Was that the tale of 2020, is that people just got so frustrated, or, and they were told by some fairly prominent people, don't even bother going. And suddenly Georgia gets two Democratic senators in one fell swoop.
Exactly, exactly. And those types of messages. And I will tell you, in 2020, I made two trips myself. You know, I was still in Florida at the time, but I made two trips up. First, and if you remember, that runoff was 60 days long, not the 30 days like you normally have and we have this time around. You know, it was a longer runoff. You know, COVID was the basis for that. However, it gives people more time to organize, you know what I mean? And so depending on who does that best, right, that's what can happen. But I will tell you, the first trip I made up in 2020, people were very excited. We were here. They were anxious. It was very positive. About 30 days into that, as we went through so much, and I will say information or disinformation, there was a combination of both, but as we went through that and you had these external factors of telling people your vote's not going to count, stay home, people decided that was true.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people who stayed home. I'm not hearing those messages, you know, overall this time around. And that's very, very encouraging to understand that people are taking that, you know, what is so important to us here in America is that right to actually cast our vote, that they're actually really excited to get out and do it. And, you know, they don't want to seem to be impeded. We've had a couple of people we've had to persuade, you know what I mean? We've had to chat with a little bit more to make sure. But overall, it's really flipped from that time frame of 2020 in the message.
Yeah, well, I think a lesson was probably learned in 2020 to some degree. I mean, you know, the idea of stepping aside has led to 2 years of really not good stuff coming from our government if you're a conservative voter. So I guess, you know, it's worth a Hail Mary, if nothing else, to get out there, even if you might not think that it matters. Holy cow, you can't just sit on the sidelines and let 2020 happen all over again.
Exactly, exactly. So we've been encouraging, and actually, some of our team members last night, there was a rally here with Herschel Walker. He was in town. Sorry for if there's any background noises, because we are literally canvassing. So I'm in a van, literally on the street in a small neighborhood in Rome, Georgia. You can't get much more grassroots than that.
Yeah, you're in the battlefield.
In the battlefield, right. But I will say this, the half of our team went to the rally last night, and they said, you know, it was a kind of a fast bus tour that I guess he's on in some cities, but he made a stop here in Rome, Georgia last night. You know, his speech was primarily around inflation and the economy, things that we know are number one on a lot of people's lists. You know, when we're at the doors, we are asking people a little bit about the policy as well. And inflation, out of control spending, these things you and I talk about all the time on your show are absolutely at the forefront of what people are worried about. You know, I was at a door yesterday with a lady who literally, she said, you know, you got to think about it this way. I'm retired. And she said, my income isn't going to increase or change. I retired, and this is what I thought I would need. This is what I would be based, you know, on what I would need to do. And then inflation hit.
Yeah.
And so while I was doing fine until that point, I now have issues as a you know, she's, you know, approaching the age of 70. And she said, I now have issues because what I had arranged for my retirement to live comfortably, you know, and into my later years isn't going as far as it used to. And now I have a scenario where I have to, you know, pay more for everything. And she said, I'm not the only one. She looked around her neighborhood, right? And this is what she's referencing me at the door. But at the rally last night, the crowd was energized. That's what I heard, is the crowd was very energized, enthusiastic. You know, and those people came out and bothered to, you know, in the cold, after a cold, wet, rainy day, and came out last night at the airport here in Rome, were very enthusiastic. And, you know, look, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It's tight, right? Because we're seeing signs for the other side across town as well. We've had some people definitely, we know, are voting, you know, I guess, for bad policy is the only way to put it, or
I was going to ask you that. What is Warnock even campaigning on? I mean, this has been the greatest mystery of the midterms to me, is that, are Democrats just selling we're not them and there's enough people who just will stick? I mean, their record is terrible for the last 2 years. I'm just, so
and
what
he
is...
He voted for that policy,
yes.
He supported it. And so when people are complaining about the economy and they're complaining whatever, if you're going to take that vote again now, because you have a voting record with him now, right? He can't just stand up there and have a platform. He's an incumbent candidate, right? And he's got actual votes that were taken on actual policy. So he can't stand up there and deny or say, I stand for this or that and the other, because you can actually see how he performed. And so the problem is, if you're going to stand up there and say inflation is bothering you, and you're going to talk about the economy and how bad it is, and you're still going to go out and vote for a person who supported that bad policy, well, then I don't know. It's really hard. It's hard for me to wrap my head around
me
that
too.
Kind of logic.
It really is very difficult to watch people just do self-inflicted damage to themselves. I mean, I kind of understand it, but good grief, everybody's getting hurt by inflation. And that's what they do. Well, so how do you keep up? I've gotten to where everything I see in the mainstream media, I can't assume that any of it is actually true. And what I'm seeing headlines that Herschel's falling behind, or that it's that Warnock is, I think I saw his gloves are off, or any of this stuff. Do you do exit polling, or is there polling that you trust that tells you which direction this thing's going?
Look, I think it's going to be a tight race. It was very close to begin with, and I think that. Look, you're going to see this poll and that poll, and every poll's going to, have a different perspective depending on how it was conducted, in who and what, and that kind of thing, and what area of the state and all that. All I know is I can give you only the perspective that I see is, look, it's going to be a tight race. Georgia is not a one way or the other, and turnout in this race, we always say turnout is key. You know, you hear that all the time. Well, it's whoever, turns out the most people, but in this particular instance, it's actually more critical because Georgia isn't a state that you can just look at anymore. And I know some people want to, go back to all this election type of information, but the state itself is not really, it's close. I mean, there are a lot of states that get to be those 1-2% states, and they're sort of 50-50, or as some people like to call when they talk about the red team or the blue team, they talk about it being purple, right? And you're at that point in Georgia. So around, the Atlanta metro area, you're going to have certain areas they're going to be very much for Warnock. When you get out into these smaller communities around the state itself, the periphery of the state, southern Georgia, up in the mountains, the northeast part around that. That turnout becomes even more critical. So one of the reasons we actually chose the team to come over and spend our time helping out our friends over at Americans for Prosperity Action and to come to Rome was because we figured we could have some impact here, right, in making sure that people get out. And I do feel like the conversations that we've had at the doors have been something that really has been impactful, and making sure people knew that they could early vote. Sometimes people don't know that, right? I know we think that everybody we assume everybody knows everything that's going on. Some people do not, but I will tell you the enthusiasm over voting is strong. It is strong, and I think like you said, the people over on the side that would support a good policy. Policy that's going to impact the economy and the federal level and understand that you can't spend your way out of inflation, right, as we always say.
Yeah.
I think those individuals understand the turnout is so important. I had a sweet lady yesterday who said, I was at the grocery store and there was a young man, and I told him to make sure he voted, because he's old enough to vote. And she said, and he asked me, well, who should I vote for? Because he was really, she said, unengaged in the process, right? He didn't really even know about the runoff. He didn't understand. And she said, I told him Herschel Walker, right? So she said, now, whether he shows up or not, I don't know. But she said, I did my part, right? I did my part everywhere I go. I'm trying to make sure that people understand to get out and vote. And so that's really, you know, that's really what we're doing with our friends over here at ASP Action. And we're up here as a team and just trying to help them out and make sure that people understand, like, that's the critical piece. You've got to show up.
What?
Or you get the government. You get the government that somebody else gives you, right?
I have kind of gotten lost. I'll be honest with you, particularly with the break and so many states were still up in the air. Where does the Senate stand right now? Is every other race settled, and we have a certain number on each side right now? And this race, should Herschel win or lose? What is the makeup of the Senate right now? Has everything else been decided?
Yeah, I believe everything's been decided. There was some talk about some lawsuits, and I have, you know, honestly, my day has been get up, get out on the doors early, go to dark, eat, rinse and repeat this week. So I have not looked at the overall. Obviously, the Senate is not, you know, we've got a lot of people that are not policy champions, and they're not a favorable balance there in terms of that. And it's not just political party. It's really, you know, the policies of even you know, because there are some Republicans in the Senate who don't always vote the right way either. So let's not make it a two-team issue that one or the other. However, this seat becomes even more critical than when you don't in that balance, right? Because rather than just having to persuade, you know, Joe Manchin, you know what I mean, to come over, this would have meaning there as well. So, it would help with that balance of being less about just one person sometimes coming down to those definitive votes where we've seen that. This would make this a little bit easier there. So
if Herschel won, does that put us at a 50-50 Senate again? And then obviously Kamala Harris is the tiebreaker, and the Democrats is the same thing. Is that the best case scenario now? And if Herschel loses, then it's a 51-49. Is that where we ended up?
I think that's where we ended up. I say that with the caveat of I have not. There's a couple of races that I believe have also been decided, but there's been some talk floating around, depending on which media outlet you're listening to, about people, you know, suing over things or some stuff. I don't know whether there'll be any standing in any of that. So we'll kind of be in that scenario. So
yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so, good luck over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll be back in Mississippi later tomorrow, and our team will be back, and we're excited as we get ready for our state legislative session.
That's right.
So next week we'll have some additional information for you around that, but we're really excited, and our friends at AFP Action actually will be engaging in our state next year. So, you know, in some of our state-based races, and we're kind of working through what that looks like and what that might look like for our team, but we'll, you know, hopefully a little bit into early next year, we'll be able to make some announcements around that, and excited to find some policy champions to help pull some great legislation across the line for us, because we want to see Mississippi thriving, and there's so much we need to do. There's certainly been some good things that have been done, but there is so much more we need to do, and so I'm excited for what that can look like and what that can be, and so. We're excited about some upcoming bills, and we'll catch you up to date on that. And hopefully, the first week of the year, as session starts, we'll be rolling out our legislative agenda, and look forward to chatting with you more about that.
All right. And everybody can find you here. Best way to kind of reach out and see what you guys are up to and everything is on Facebook.
Yeah. You can do that. You can go also to AmericansForProsperity.org. All of our state chapters is a drop down there. You can choose Mississippi, and there'll be some action center. You'll see a lot of the federal policy on there, because that is a good bit of what we're engaging in now. But as we move into the first part of next year, you'll start to see more information, press releases around state-based stuff. But on our website, you know, that's one way to do it. We'll also have a lot of what we call action center items coming out as we move through the legislative session about bills. And we look forward to engaging people with that. But if you go to Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook, you'll see a lot of what we have going on. We've got an open house coming up in Starkville, January 26th. And this Saturday, if you're in the Jackson area, this Saturday, evening, 6 p.m., I believe, is the start time, and we have our Holly Jolly Policy Party. So come on out and celebrate, have a little Christmas cheer with us, and we'll catch you up on some of the things we've been working on as well.
Well, very good. All right. Well, good you're out there fighting the good fight. Good luck with everything. Next Tuesday is the election. That's going to be a very interesting thing to watch.
Will be. All right. Talk to you later, Mike. Thanks.
Thanks, Darla. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, there's people who just sit around on the radio and talk for a couple hours a day, complain, bellyache, moan. And then there's some people that are actually out there in the field doing the work. And I think I'm more wired towards just sitting behind a microphone for 2 hours a day and whining than actually doing the work. And maybe that's to my detriment, but the Americans for Prosperity, you got to hand it to them. They are out there in a very frustrating system that moves very slow with a ton of setbacks, dealing with a lot of people you just can't even understand the mentality of why they would reelect a Rudy Warnock. And you have to talk to these people and, you know, You gotta admire them. I really do. The people that go in there day after day after day and try to affect this political system, nudge it in the right direction, it's a lot of times very unrewarding work for long periods of time before they get victories. So I admire what they're doing. I really do encourage people to support this organization, to get involved. Make sure you look up Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi on Facebook or go to their website. And just support these people. If I don't have the proclivities to actually do what they're doing on a daily basis because I have such a low level of frustration, you may be like that too. We can at least support the people that actually are doing the hard work on the ground. So that's Americans for Prosperity.
We'll be right. I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart off.
Short segment now. I do have some good news. There's some good news out there. Well, we'll see what comes out of Georgia with Herschel Walker. You know, I always find it interesting. Big Herschel Walker fan as far as athletics goes. Don't know he was the best candidate to run in Georgia, but that's okay. And he could turn out to be a great senator if he makes it in there, but as somebody who spent my first two college years at University of Georgia, Herschel Walker is the man. And so I've always been a big fan. I always find it interesting to watch since Herschel's been running. I've gone back, I guess that's a pun intended, huh? Gone back and looked at some of his highlights from college. If you have not ever seen, if you're at all interested in just innate talent, Herschel Walker is somebody to watch. I like his college highlights much better even than his professional highlights, but watching him and just seeing what a great running back he was, I always find it interesting to watch old clips of people and then see where they are now. You know, if you had interviewed 20-year-old Heisman Trophy winning Herschel Walker, University of Georgia, back in, I don't know what that was, 1982 or 83 or something like that, and just ask him, you think you'll ever be senator from the state of Georgia? I mean, it's just interesting the way people's lives go. Herschel Walker's also, I don't know if I've mentioned this on air before. I've told this story so many times to people just over the years. Herschel Walker did something that is really quite amazing, and there's documentaries about this. It might have been one of the ESPN 30 for 30s or E60, whatever those documentaries, great sports documentaries on SportsCenter. As bad as they are in some things, they really do put together some interesting sports entertainment. Herschel Walker was bullied. He was a pudgy, unathletic, outcast nerd, I guess is maybe the best way to put it. And I'm not trying to be rude. This is really kind of the way he described himself. He was just kind of a non-entity. He hated to go out into the playground because he would get bullied. He would literally get beat up. There were times he would try to stay in class. I mean, if you look at Herschel Walker running for the University of Georgia, the guy was just a beast. He's still an incredible physical specimen at whatever his age is now. He's probably close to 60 years old, and the guy looks like he could still play football. But that is not how he started out. And there was one summer. There was one summer where he decided he was sick of being bullied. And he started doing push-ups and sit-ups, I think. I think that's basically all he did. I mean, he was this little kid. And I don't think it was really at the urging of anybody else. He just got sick and tired of the life that he had. And so over the course of one summer, and I don't know if it's kind of urban legend in the documentary, they show him, he lives somewhere near train tracks and whatever part of Georgia he's from, and or I guess he's from Georgia. I don't even know. Anyway, wherever he was, it was, you know, not a real affluent area, near some train tracks. And when the train would come, he would run and race the train during this one summer break from school. And as the story goes from this documentary, essentially during that summer, he started to get into shape, starting to get some level of athleticism. And within a couple of years, he was the star of the high school football team and everybody loved him. I mean, for a child to turn on a switch like that and completely change their lives. I've been a grown-up faced with challenges, never been bullied or anything like that, but there have been times where things were not going well for me. I've never been able to just turn on a dime and completely change my life all for the better all at once. And this was just a kid who did this. It's really very remarkable thing. I mean, if he had stayed on the trajectory that he was on, he would have been, I don't know, probably somebody who lived their entire life in just some quiet desperation if he had yielded to the bullying and just decided he wasn't worth anything. But this kid, this middle schooler, just decided, nope, no more. That's not who I'm going to be. And he changed his entire life and became, you know, one of the most successful, one of the most accomplished athletes. And now, potentially, somebody that accomplishes even greater things by being elected to the Senate. So it's really an amazing story, and I guess it's what's in all of us as human beings. We can just decide one day, nah, not doing this anymore. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be the more successful version of myself. I'm going to be more accomplished. I'm not going to be the guy who gets crapped on all the time. It's quite a story. If you've never seen the documentary, it's very, very interesting. Now, this also led Herschel Walker to say he developed a split personality. And when he ran angry. And he used that anger of being bullied to where he wanted to destroy anybody that he was playing against. Now, this served him very well in the football field. And I think in his personal life, that probably becomes some level of a challenge. But apparently he compartmentalized this stuff, and this kid who was bullied, he took all of that anger and frustration and turned it into incredible success. So there's that about Herschel Walker. I'll be right back. From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB here in the Mack Hike of Flowood Studios. I wanted to, I guess, cover this story. I got about just enough time in the rest of the hour to do this. I talked earlier about, I mean, do people want to be scammed? This really kind of ties several different things of today. The idea that the West is maybe not the attractive destination they keep telling us it is, because Western countries have become so massively corrupt at this point, and they're not the bastions of freedom that are advertised. This is a perfect example of that. Apparently, there's an article about Russian oil out there. Our gasoline has been going down. Barrels of oil have been coming down. Now, I'm wondering, does anybody give Joe Biden credit for that? Remember, we blamed him alone for all of the increased oil prices. And he certainly has a hand in that with his horrific energy policy. But it's just funny to me when that I don't hear conservatives going, well, the White House must be doing something right. Oil prices are coming down. But when it comes to other countries and their oil, I want you to listen to some of these things from these corrupt Western leaders. The European Union is trying to put together a price cap for Russian oil. Basically, they're trying to get everybody together like in a cartel and say that we're not going to pay anything more than this for Russian crude oil. Now, this is a kind of a mafia tactic, and it's almost funny. So what they're considering is going to Russia and saying, well, we'll buy oil from you. Russia wants to sell their oil. This has really been the only thing they've wanted to do. They wanted to sell it to Germany through Nord Stream 2. We wouldn't let them. We said that they couldn't do that. I mean, they want to do some business. It's a big part of their economy, maybe the biggest part of their economy. Have you ever seen the landmass of Russia? It is truly amazing how big that country is. It spans, I think, 9 time zones. And so anyway, these Europeans are trying to hold Russia's feet to the fire, and they're saying, we're not going to pay you more than $60 or $70 a barrel for Russian crude oil. Well, they're trying to figure out this level that they will pay to try to hamstring and hurt the Russians and still get some oil. And it's funny because these countries are struggling to meet their own energy demands right now. It's got to be almost funny. I'd love to be in Vladimir Putin's shoes just going, oh, you guys over there, you don't have enough energy. Some of your people may freeze to death this winter. Yeah, you let us know how tough you're going to, The thing is these Western leaders, doesn't matter if it's in the United States or in Europe, they will allow their people to suffer just to score some kind of political points or to continue to maintain their power. And this is why I say, do we want to be scammed? Because it's here in the United States, too. I've just got several quotes in here. So the EU is talking about this. We need to make sure we set this price really low so it hurts the Russians. It says this is the European Commissioner, Vice President Valdis Dombrovskis, something like that. He said, if you put the price cap too high, it doesn't really bite. Oil is the biggest source of revenue for the Russian budget, so it's very important to get this right so it really has an impact on Russia's ability to finance this war. So they always, this has been the mantra of the last, really for the last 30 years, but particularly the last 10 to 15 years, is hurt Russia at all costs. So they're saying they need to make sure that they set this price low. Here's the problem. Right now, according to Bloomberg's oil strategist Julian Lee, Russian's flagship Urals crude oil traded at a massive discount of $33.28, or about 40% discount to international Brent crude. And they are selling this stuff to China and India. So India and China and other countries that are playing nice with Russia, whether you like China or not, I don't care. But these countries who are not hell-bent on trying to destroy and hurt the Russians, they are getting huge deals on energy right now. Their people are all benefiting from their relationship with Russia just by basically not being hostile to them and agreeing to just trade with them. And Russia's going, hey, we got to sell this oil. We had a whole bunch we'd planned on selling to Europe. We got a bunch sloshing around in here. We're cutting deals. And these countries, India, China, there was somebody else in here I know that was parts of Africa. They are awash in very cheap oil right now. This is what our own Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said. She said, quote, if Russian oil is going to be selling at bargain prices and we're happy to have India get that bargain, or Africa or China, it's fine. That is the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, basically saying we're fine if everybody else gets those deals, while the American people that she is supposedly represents to some degree. We know the U.S. Treasury Secretary really represents Wall Street and global financial interests, but this is an administration official in America. She's letting the American people suffer through higher oil prices because of this disruption to the world markets and trying to keep Russian crude off the markets. We won't buy from them. So she is letting this is it, so whether it's European leaders, American leaders, they're saying, oh, we know that other countries are able to get about $33. That is about $1.50 a gallon gasoline. If we were getting oil here for $33 a barrel from Russia, our gas would be about $1.50, about half where it is right now. But to make this point to these oligarchs here in the United States, Janet Yellen and the rest of them, they just want to hurt Russia, and they are willing to make you, pay the price for their desire to hurt Russia. China? India? Oh, they're getting sweetheart deals. Africa? They're just letting the oil flow on in and getting a great deal on it. It's It's happy times are here again in these other countries, but Western leaders will sacrifice the happiness, the financial well-being of their own people. And they're doing it. It's quite obvious. This Russian oil is trading on markets at deep discounts, and we are just sitting that out. Isn't it nice? I mean, because we know that all of these people, it doesn't matter if it's the people at the EU or it's Janet Yellen, she doesn't fill up her car with gasoline. She doesn't pull out her debit card at a pump. The taxpayers pay for her gas. None of these things matter. She's the one that went around after she was head of the Federal Reserve and spoke to several banks. I think she made about $7 million just going around and giving some 30-minute speeches. And if you've ever heard her speak, she's wildly unimpressive. But somehow she got $7 million from the big banks to make these speeches. That's part of the scam. This was after she was head of the Federal Reserve and made sure she took care of the banks. So when she got out of that office, the banks took care of her to the tune of about $7 million for a few ridiculous speeches. These are Western governments now. For whatever they want to do, whatever power or profit that they have lined up, they will let 330 million Americans, and I think about 600 million Europeans, they will let you suffer so they can accomplish their goals. This is why I'm saying, man. These little third world countries that I'm looking at expatting to, it would be hard to find a tin pot dictator in some of these little countries that is near as corrupt as the major institutions that are running Western societies at this point. I'll be right back. This is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, final segment for the day. Apparently, breaking news on that is on the oil, the price caps. The Europeans are like in the worst bargaining position in the world. If the leaders cared about their people, then they'd have absolutely no bargaining whatsoever. But luckily for the European leadership, the oligarchs in Europe who are pushing this anti-Russia everything, they don't care what happens to the people. So they can stick to their guns and try to hold Russia's feet to the fire because they don't really care if a bunch of Europeans freeze. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If they acknowledge the fact they have a big energy crisis going on in Europe right now and it's winter, I'm sure people over there are starting to notice the chilly temperatures. And I don't know how many forests are left to be cut down in Germany, but if the German authorities, if European authorities, if they cared about the people at all, they'd have no leverage. The only leverage they have is their complete antipathy for the European actual citizen over there. And it's amazing to watch from afar and say, how in the world do these European people allow their leadership to embark on this war and confrontation with Russia and allow them to freeze? But they're essentially doing the same thing here. We're just not to that freezing point yet. What we have here, so the European leadership is going to allow their people to suffer horrifically. We've talked for months now about, since this Ukraine war and all of the sanctions they've put on Russia, how businesses have seen their energy costs go up 10x. Small businesses are going under in Europe, all over the place. They can't afford to open their doors. They can't afford the energy cost involved with operating their businesses over there. Here in the U.S., the way it's going to manifest itself here might not be through the energy side. It's going to be through the currency side. Because the U.S. has weaponized the dollar. We have this great privilege of having the world's reserve currency. And instead of just taking advantage and using that to the advantage of the American people by just understanding there'll be demands for our business and for our dollars, our elites here have weaponized that dollar to harm countries at will. And so what's happening now, as I've reported on a lot, is this new BRICS alignment. They are setting up a parallel system to the dollar, and eventually they're going to unleash this thing, and the dollar is going to fall through the floor. You think inflation's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. So the Europeans may freeze this winter. Americans, your freezing is yet to come. And it will be because, not because weaponizing the dollar. And if you think for a second that this is a partisan issue, I will remind you that it was Donald Trump. Donald Trump put a huge number of sanctions on all kinds of countries around the world, further driving them into the arms of the Russia-China alliance, including Russia. Donald Trump did a lot of sanctioning on Nord Stream 2. How dare they try to trade their oil with Germany and with Europe? So it's just both parties, the Biden administration, even worse on it. So what's going to happen is eventually all of these little countries we've been bullying with the U.S. dollar are going to get together and go, all right, we're not using that dollar anymore. It's just too dangerous. These Americans, they are just too unhinged. If we do one little thing America doesn't like, suddenly they sanction us and try to destroy our economy. So we're getting off this dollar. That is happening right now. And you will see the effects of it then. And it will be like inflation. Nobody will understand why it happened. Each party will blame the other. They'll pretend they had nothing to do with it. They'll blame it on external things. Oh, this Russia, China, they're just determined to take down the U.S. They will ignore the bullying that the United States did for 70 years using the dollar, and they'll pretend like we didn't do anything wrong. They're just suddenly attacking us. And Americans will buy it, unfortunately, but that's when our time is coming. I'll tell you what, the leadership of Western countries is absolutely horrible. Gotta go.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.